Where have we been? Well, we have been in the book of Esther. If this is your first time here, or your first time in a long time, we are right in the middle of Esther. So we are in chapter 5 this week. Last week we were in chapter 4. It finished off with Mordecai saying what? For such a... Yes, that's kind of how we capped it off last week. That's where Mordecai left it. Well, this week, we're going to be looking at a few different things that are happening, but it's going to be a major extreme. So I shared in the first gathering, here in Oregon, we have an idea of what extremes are when it comes to weather. Okay, I used to work in the construction field before I worked here at the shift, and my life revolved around about 3 weather apps, and because we roofed, and I ran a commercial roofing division for a company, and so in the commercial world, they're flat, and so if you open up that roof and it's raining, guess what happens? You have waterfalls inside of that building, and then guess what happens? I get in trouble because I said, go. I gave them the green light. So one day you can experience sun and it's beautiful. At 2 o'clock, it turns and you've got just gross weather. Yeah? Gross weather. The day after I was married, Amy and I, we drove to Denver to go on our honeymoon, and we went over Eisenhower Pass on I-70, and that's about 14,000 plus feet, and it's a really, really cool area of Colorado right in the Rockies. On the west side of the tunnel up there, it was beautiful. Birds were chirping and singing. Butterflies were... I was brand new married, right? Was like that. Still is like that. And if you see Amy, you can tell her that I said it's still like that. Butterflies are fluttering. Okay. We got through the tunnel, which is about 1.5 miles long, and on the other side, on the east side of Eisenhower Pass, was a whiteout snowstorm in the middle of June. So extremes, right? You went from light to dark. Well, today in chapter 5, we are going to see that this is a story with a pretty major extreme. Okay, so the word extreme is this: either of two abstract things that are as different from each other as possible. That's how Webster defines that extreme. So today we're going to see a queen throw a party. She's going to throw a feast in the palace. And so this is going to be a time of connection between a king, his queen, and his most trusted leader, Haman. That's who we're going to see today in chapter 5. The best food in the country, in the kingdom, is going to be there, okay? The best spread, the best wine, the best everything. It's just going to be awesome. Think about that. Think about, like, if you were invited by, who would it be? Someone way up there, right? On that social status, it's like, hey, I want you to come to this party, and it's going to be off the hook. I heard some Snickers. That's my age saying, we used to say off the hook when I was a kid. Now they say it's lit. It's going to be lit. Right? Oh, kids are like, what? Yes. Okay? So you've got the life, man. That's the life. This big party. The queen's throwing this party, and the king's there, and Haman's there, and the best food, the best drinks, the best everything. And man, this is the life. And immediately that scene changes from light and life to a really dark place. You've got a guy that leaves that party, and immediately bitterness and anger and fear and selfishness and pride and ego, they all kind of just pour in on him at one time, and it just ruins his night. All of these things ultimately lead that person to start plotting and planning murder. So today we're going to be left sitting in the shadow of the gallows. That's really where this story is going to finish for us today. So would you stand with me this morning as we read Esther chapter 5? I'm going to read this. Would you follow along with me? Esther chapter 5 says this. On the third day, Esther put on her royal robes and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, in front of the king's quarters, while the king was sitting on his royal throne inside the throne room opposite the entrance to the palace. And when the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won favor in his sight. And he held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Then Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. And the king said to her, "What is it, Queen Esther? What is your request? It shall be given you, even to the half of my kingdom." And Esther said, "If it please the king, let the king and Haman come today to a feast that I have prepared for the king." Then the king said, "Bring Haman quickly, so that we may do as Esther has asked." So the king and Haman came to the feast that Esther had prepared. And as they were drinking wine after the feast, the king said to Esther, "What is your wish? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to the half of my kingdom, it shall be fulfilled." Then Esther answered, "My wish and my request is this: if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my wish and fulfill my request, let the king and Haman come to the feast that I will prepare for them, and tomorrow I will do as the king has said." And Haman went out that day joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he neither rose nor trembled before him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman restrained himself and went home, and he sent and brought his friends and his wife Zeresh. And Haman recounted to them the splendor of his riches, the number of his sons, all the promotions with which the king had honored him, and how he had advanced him above the officials and the servants of the king. Then Haman said, "Even Queen Esther, let no one but me come with the king to the feast she prepared. And tomorrow also I am invited by her together with the king. Yet all this is worth nothing to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate." Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, "Let a gallows 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast." This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. Let's pray. God, your word is truth. Your word is life. God, your word is a gift to us. Thank you for speaking to us through this word. God, thank you for the challenge that's going to be presented to us this morning, God, to turn to you and draw closer to you, because ultimately, God, that's what you desire. Thank you for this. We ask this in your name, and everyone said, amen.
Amen. You can have a seat. Thanks, Jason. You're going to hear from Jason at the conclusion. He's going to lead us through our practical application, what we call our so what here, if you're here for the first time. So we're going to apply this at the end, the teaching at the end of this morning's conversation of faith. And then we're going to have some extended worship time. So Kevin and team are going to be coming back. So I'm going to be truthful. I'm going to be honest with you right now. You know my weakness, by the way. You know my weakness. Right now, I'm very distracted because there's a 1940 Harley sitting right out there, okay? And so pray for me and pray that Jesus fills my heart and my mind today. Yeah. Good to see so many people today. Let's jump into the text. Observations, okay? So we walk through the text. What did you see? What caught your attention? What did you take notice of? What do you got? Let's go.
Esther's respectful.
Okay, good. What else we got? She's patient. Very good. Keep going. Huh? Festivities. Party. Yeah. Thanks, Jason, for giving me new lingo. My kids tell me that I don't have the proper, like, I think I know what the kids on the street are saying, okay? But I'm told I don't, so thanks. What else? What else did you see? Yes. You saw, what'd you see, Jack? She was nice. Yeah, very good. Love it, Jack. Way to go. What else we got? Patient, yeah. Yeah. Cliffhanger, come back for the next party. Anything else? Bitterness overruling any joy. Great job, John. We're gonna touch base on that. Okay, let's get started. Let's step into the text. I want to step into it by starting by asking us some questions, okay? Here's the first question for you. What kind of plans have you made for life? kind of plans have you made for life? Like we're not just talking this afternoon, going home and watching the NFL or watching the MLB playoffs, okay? Like, what kind of plans do you have for life? Let's go ahead, open it up. What kind of plans do you have?
College.
College, great answer. Keep going. Kids, get married. Great plans. What else you got? Debt-free, love it. Anything else?
Retirement,
right? Okay, now let's ask this question. Are these solid plans? Huh? Are they solid plans? In fact, what's it going to take for you to complete this, okay? What kind of character quality in your life is it going to require of you to finish this? In fact, let's ask this question. Is it going to be easy? Not going to be easy, right? In fact, maybe let's just wrap up this by asking this question. Have you ever started something before and never completed it? Yeah. As I said during the first gathering, come to my house. Yeah, visit my place. Like, some of the tasks I complete just might be a few years down the line, okay? Today we're going to do this. We're going to look at two individuals who are making plans, okay? And they are drastically different plans with drastically different motives. And what we're going to see over the next few weeks, they're going to have drastically different outcomes, okay? So today we're going to look at Esther and we're going to look at Haman. So let's get started and talk about Esther, all right? We want to talk about active faith. Esther's active faith this morning. And to do this, I feel like we need to go back a couple weeks and we need to do a little bit of review, okay? So we need to talk about the position that Esther is in. Position. Three things that I want to highlight this morning about Esther. Number one, we know that she's queen. That's a position she's in. It's an important position that she's in. She's queen. Now, by being queen, she really doesn't have a lot of authority. She can't make policy. In fact, we even find out that being queen, we find out that she doesn't even have access to the king unless the king has invited her. And to show up uninvited, like if the king's in a bad mood, like off with your head, right? Okay? So kind of this figurehead. The second thing we've got to remember about Esther is she is smoking hot. Right? She's beautiful. In fact, the king, he's really superficial. He had to have the hottest woman in the land, right? So she's the most beautiful woman in the kingdom. Now that's going to come into play. All right? And the third thing that we need to highlight about Esther is this. She might be the queen of the Persian Empire, but she's also a Jew, right? And it's through this, the nation of Israel, it's through the Jews that the Messiah would come. So all these three things together, these are her positions. This has positioned her, and we've said in the past, that position is the undergirdings for what? The platform of your life. That by the way, is supposed to be a wooden stool. I know it looks kind of like a UFO, like, you know, snagging people in the city of Susa there. Not a UFO, it's a wooden stool, okay? That's funny. So listen, Esther, okay, she's positioned herself, right? We've got position as queen, as her beautiful, beautiful queen, her beauty. We also have this, she's a Jew. Undergirdings, it's the platform from her life, from which she will what? She will give voice and she will give action. It's the platform for an active faith. And that's what we're going to see today, is her active faith. Now, what's she going to do? What's she going to do? Come on, we've already said it a few times. What's she going to do? Huh? Yeah, she can throw, but before she throws a party, where's she going? She's going to stare death in the face, right? In fact, according to the text, what does she say? She says, I'm going to see the king, and actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go break the law. Yeah, and we'll just see if the king's in a good mood or not, all right? And so this is a platform for her active faith. Don't miss this. Esther's not going to go face death alone. If we go back to chapter 4, I want you to see how we wrapped up chapter 4. It said this. So Esther's speaking, and she says, I want you to do this. Here's your instructions. This is her first orders as queen. She says, gather all the Jews to be found in Susa. Hold a fast on my behalf. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my young woman will also fast as you do. Then I will go to the king. Though it's against the law, there it was. And if I perish, I perish. So this is a picture of a nation, the Jews gathering together and they're fasting for 3 days. They're seeking God for 3 days. They're repenting for 3 days. They're begging God for his intervention for 3 days. Now, by the way, notice the fast. It is not an easy fast, is it? All right? It's like, hey listen, I'm not gonna go to Taco Bell for a month, right? It's not that I'm just gonna avoid sweets for a month. It's not even this. It's not like, okay, I'm gonna take all food off the table, but I'm gonna go on a juiced fast for a month. In this case, obviously 3 days. But what is it? It's like no food, no water, no loopholes, night or day. Nothing's going in your mouth except oxygen. That's it. That's hard, isn't it? Right? Nothing. By the way, oftentimes the path of active faith is not easy, is it? I think because of this, oftentimes we don't experience the life that's on the other side of the journey because we just kind of stall out along the path. Like we get started, we say, this is going to be so exciting. And then we realize, man, this is harder than I thought. This is more inconvenient than I thought. This is going to require more of me than I thought. This is going to require more faith than I thought. For 3 days, Esther and Israel, they were active in their faith, fasting. Their body is hungry, and they're saying, God, we are so hungry for your presence. Like bodies in pain, and they're saying, this situation's so painful. Oh. I'm so thirsty right now. God, we are thirsty for you and for your presence, for your intervention. I'm so weak. It's been 2 days. No food, no water. It's been 3 days. I'm so weak. But God, you are strong. So for 3 days, they're fasting. And for 3 days, don't miss this. Put yourselves right now. Enter into the text. All right? Put yourself in the shoes of Esther. For 3 days, like she has a plan, act of faith. Hey, everybody, get together. Here's what's going to happen. In 3 days, I'm going to go before the king, and I'm going to stare death in the face, right? And so for 3 days, people have been fasting, and for 3 days, the fear of the unknown is coming up. What's going to happen? And she had 3 days to ask herself, what in the world did I just get myself into? Have you ever done that? Now you make a huge commitment, I'm going to do this, and as time wears on. So she had 3 days to say, you know what? I'm just going to pack this one in. This one's too hard. Like, listen, I can't do that. I'm too afraid. I'm too fearful to go before the king. And maybe I'm just going to take my chances. Yeah, I know that you're all dead. We're all dead, right? But I'm going to take my chances in the king's palace, and I'm going to hide. And so when the slaughter's going on, maybe I won't be found out. All right? She had every opportunity to do that for 3 days. She could have packed it in. Now let's just stop and let's just talk about breaking points. Because the reality is in life, every one of us have breaking points, don't we? There's points in our life where it's just too much. It's just too hard. Just mentally or emotionally can't get there. We all have breaking points. What's your breaking point? What's your breaking point when it comes to relationships? What's your breaking point when it comes to work? What's your breaking point when it comes to faith and God and an active faith? The reality is I want you to make this personal. God has more confidence in you than you have in yourself. More confidence in you than you have yourself. And let me quantify that, okay? So for the believer who's placed their faith and trust in Jesus, right? At that moment of faith and trust in Jesus, what do we believe happened? We believe that we are indwelt through who? The power of the Holy Spirit takes up residency in our hearts and lives, empowers us, leads us, what? Ultimately to God the Father. God the Spirit reigning in our lives. So he's leading, he's guiding, he's directing. He's giving power. He's strengthening us. And so really what we're talking about is God has more confidence in him through you than you have in yourself. Back to the text. Esther might have a breaking point, but this ain't it. This is not her breaking point. She has active faith. Her active faith was in action prior to even presenting herself to the king. Let's look at the text. It says, let the king and Haman come today to a feast I've prepared for the king. So the king and Haman came to the feast that Esther had prepared. Did you catch that? So before Esther even presents herself to the king, she's making plans, and her plans are for what? Her plans, like think about this. She's not gathering together ladies and say, hey, I'm getting ready to go see the king, and this could go either way. All right? So just in case I die, here's what I want my funeral to look like, okay? Here's the song that I want played. I got this picture here. All right, the selfie, it's got my good side. I want that up on the screen. I want this person to do my funeral. Here's where I want to be buried. She's not making plans for dying. Before she ever goes see the king, she's making plans for living. She has this feast already prepared for the king and Haman. Her act of faith has said, although I haven't shown my face to the king, although I haven't experienced that emotional tension and relief of having that scepter extended to me, although I haven't experienced my quivering hand touching that scepter, by faith, I'm going to make some plans for living. And so let's just stop right now and let's just ask the question, what kind of plans are you making? Are you making plans for living? Are you making plans for existing? Are you making plans for dying? Because life's hard, by the way. We know that, right? And oftentimes, by default, like, we're just dying a slow death on our couch. Life gets hard, circumstances get hard, and so we just want to go into our living room, and we just want to close the blinds, crawl up on the couch, and just Netflix it out until circumstances pass us over and pass by, right? And so what are we doing? We're dying a slow death. What kind of plans are you making? By extension, Esther's act of faith is making plans not only for her living, but you got to remember this, for an entire nation's living. And it's all through this act of faith. She's going to do this. She's going to risk much, her life, to bring life to other people. Now, I want to do this. I want to switch gears now. That's Esther. Let's go to Haman, okay? So I want you to compare Esther to Haman. The actions of Haman are not described as what? Active faith, but actually it's described as faithless act. That's Haman, all right? So night and day, as we look at Haman, we are going to see his words, we're going to see his actions, we're going to see his motivations, and we need to recognize that they are complete polar opposites of Queen Esther. In fact, Haman's a case study when it comes to entitlement. Like, he just thinks he's entitled to the whole world bowing down to him. Haman is a case study when it comes to the subject of the pride of life and how the pride of life takes hold of us. Listen, Haman is more concerned just with position, right? Just with his position. And he just, like, what's his platform? He just wants people to see his position. That's it. That's what he's solely concerned with. In his mind, he's entitled to have other people bow down to him. In his mind, he expects others' honor and respect. In fact, in his mind, here's what he wants. He expects the whole world to bow down to him, for him to be hovering over everybody else, and he likes it that way. That's Haman. I want you to also remember that according to the text, he's receiving not only the honor of the king, but there is a new person now who appears to be honoring Haman in chapter 5. And that person that appears to be honoring Haman is the most beautiful woman in the kingdom. She's come in and she said, hey, I want to throw up this feast. I've already prepared it. And the only people I want to feast is you, king, and bring Haman in. So now he's receiving this beautiful woman's attention. So here it is. Here's the picture. It's the surprise feast. Haman didn't plan it. The king didn't even know. But out of the blue, the most beautiful woman in the kingdom prepares a feast. And so what do they have at the surprise feast? Just as Jason has said, they've got the best food in the entire kingdom at this feast. They've got the best wine of the entire kingdom at this feast. And in Haman's eyes, Haman the ladder climber, who's hanging out with the king and the queen, he's got the best company of the entire kingdom at this feast. In fact, in Haman's eyes, it can't get any better than this. And by the way, what we're going to see is it doesn't get any better than this. Haman leaves this party on cloud 9. And as he's leaving the king's palace, he goes through the king's gate. Go back to chapter 4. Who did we see at the king's gate? Mordecai. Mordecai, as we last saw him, like, he's wearing sackcloth. We said sackcloth was this goat's hair that was rough. He's covered in ashes. He's mourning, right? Haman comes and he sees Mordecai, and guess what? Mordecai, true to his nature, does what he always does and doesn't bow down to Haman. And how does Haman respond? Anger. Yep. Check this out. On his way home, this one man with this one action ruins his entire evening. Like, he's just had this. He's had a king elevate him. He's had a nation bowing down to him. He spent an evening with fine dining, and all that doesn't matter anymore because this one person won't bow down to him. One man, one man's opinion, Mordecai's opinion of him has become more important. Listen closely. Listen, please, listen closely. One man's opinion of him has become more important than the king's opinion of him. If you're a believer here this morning, all of a sudden, alarm bells should be going off in our heads right now. Because if you're a believer, you have a king too. Don't you? And your king is more powerful than King Ahasuerus or any king before him or any king after him. Your king, he holds all authority and all power in all eternity. And so the key question that you and I as believers this morning, we have to ask ourselves is this: how important is God's opinion in my life? How important is God's opinion in my life? And maybe this morning you and I just need to be reminded that God does have an opinion. And his opinions are much different than ours. And even how he gets there. Like the way that my opinions are formed, or some of them are preference, some are according to personality, and some are family of origin stuff. For example, my opinion, based on preference, I don't care what anybody says, the best cheese, and it is cheese, is Velveeta. All right? That's my opinion, right? Yeah. Listen, my personality, okay? Here's my personality. My opinion based upon personality is the best shirts are black or some sort of shades of black, right? And if there's brighter colors, there better still be some black in it, right? And even at that, it's still not going to be worn that often. I've got opinions based on my family of origin and the ways that I observe my parents treat each other. It's affected my faith. It's affected the way that I communicate with my wife, right? My ethics, my morality. I've got opinions on that stuff. But listen, God's opinions are completely different. His opinion, first and foremost, is based upon fact. Like, he's the author and designer of life. It's based upon truth. In fact, it's like God kind of holds the key to a puzzle of life. God holds the keys to all the pieces of puzzle of life, right? Because what? He designed and created the puzzle that is life. It's based upon truth of his character, his nature, who he is. And since life was created with intention and design, you and I as living beings are at the center of that creation, which means this: as a unique creation with personality, dreams, and talent, God has opinions about you. He's got desires about you. He's got hopes for you. He's got beliefs in him through you. So we're back to square one. How important is God's opinion? I think the subject that we're really discussing this morning is biblically, we call this the fear of man versus the fear of God. The fear of man versus the fear of God. Hey, Talanoa, why don't you come up in here and help me out this morning? And why don't you come up as well? Yep. John, come on. Yep. Yep. Come on up. Stephen. Yeah, that's you. I'm sorry. There we go. Don, will you come help me out too? Yeah, thanks, Don. Talanoa, man, I love you. I do. I admire you. There's parts of your life, man, I wish I was more like you. Can I hang out with you more? Can I be close to you? Can I be close to you? Awesome. Thanks. There we go. John, same thing with you, man. Listen, I know your job, right? You've got some great information, right? And man, can I be close to you? Yeah. Don, man, talented, like, musician and all that. Like, can I be close to you? Like, yeah. And Stephen, buddy, are you kidding? Like, everything, mechanic, all that stuff that you do, man. Like, can I be close to you guys? And you know what this suddenly becomes? This is the fear of man. I see things in all these guys, and I really want to be close to them, and I really want them to be happy with me. I don't want to somehow, like, break relationship with them. And so I'm now suddenly, you know, Proverbs says this, the fear of man is what? It's a snare. That's what it is. The fear of man is a snare. The fear of man does this. It immobilizes us at times when we should be active. The fear of man, sometimes it gags us when we should be speaking, is the fear of man. The fear of man does this. It weaves this web of ambiguity on biblical principles that are absolutely clear. That's the fear of man. Okay? And so Proverbs 29 says, now I'm being held captive by other thoughts and opinions and preferences. It's the fear of man. Now let's ask this question. Like, why do we do this to ourselves? By the way, these guys weren't reaching out and grabbing the rope. I was offering it to them. And I'm just saying, hey, would you do this? Would you entrap me? By the way, check this out. The word trap here in the text oftentimes refers to what? A bird of flight. Man, I want to fly in life. But suddenly the fear of man has just entrapped me. So why do we do that? I think it starts with this. I think it starts with recognizing that deep down, we all know that we are not the author of life. But at the same time, we know that there's a big picture to life, and somehow we fit in that, and we don't exactly know how we fit in that. We also know that I can't create my personal ultimate meaning for life, and so what do? I start looking in other areas for meaning in life, other areas for meaning in life. And here's what I want you to know this morning. The people that you give the most authority to in your life, they're going to define for you who you are. Catch that? They're going to define for you how much you're worth. They're going to define for you what you can do and what you can't do. And oftentimes it's the people that we fear the most that have the most control over us. That's the fear of man. And that's why oftentimes it is so hard and so difficult and so painful to free ourselves from the fear of man. Thanks, everybody. By the way, you do know this. God is active in freeing you from the fear of man. Oftentimes we're freed not by removing the fear from other people, not removing that great fear of their disapproval of me, but we're freed by transferring that fear to the proper places. It's God stepping into our fears with us. It's God proving that he is enough for us. And it's ultimately what happens is fear loses its power. Fear loses its grip over us. And so Proverbs 29, it concludes this way. Yeah, it says that the fear of man is a snare, but it concludes, it says, but whoever trusts in the Lord is safe. See, the great fear oftentimes is we feel on a very core level of our lives, listen, if I don't have this person's respect, right, I'm going to die. I'm not safe. No, the text says, listen, those who what? Trust in the Lord and recognize that he is enough, they're the ones who are safe. Now, there's a lot more principles that we could talk about through the text. I'm going to leave you with one minute snapshot. We could talk about how godly counsel versus, you know, worldly counsel. We see Haman, he's going back to his house. We see counselors around him saying, you know, like, you know, that you're doing wrong. We could talk about some of that. We could talk about what kind of plans we're making in our lives. We could talk about who's speaking into our lives. I want to leave you with this. Despite all we said about Haman, I want you to recognize Haman has faith too. He has faith too. Let's read verse 14. Verse 14, yet all this is worth nothing to me so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. Then his wife, Zeresh, and all his friends said to him, let a gallows 50 cubits high be made, and in the morning tell the king to have Mordecai hanged upon it. Then go joyfully with the king to the feast. This idea pleased Haman, and he had the gallows made. Haman's got faith too, but he has a twisted faith. Who is the object of Haman's faith? Huh? Haman himself. He's the object of his own faith. He's assumed a position of ultimate authority over his life. He's answerable to nobody. He's making decisions that are way above his pay grade. Yeah, he says, okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to assume, because of who I am, when I go to the king and ask for the king for basically the head of Mordecai, the king's just going to say, fine. That's going to say, let's go ahead. Let's do this. Before I've even gone to see the king, let's just go ahead and make the gallows. Let's just go ahead and get this started right now. He hasn't even gone to the king yet. By the way, can you see the parallels between Esther's faith? She was making plans before she went to the king, and we can see Haman's. He's making plans before he goes to the king. Interesting side note. Haman says, hey, let's make a gallows 50 cubits. You know how high that is? 75 feet tall. That's how that translates. It's going to be a monument to me. The whole Persian Empire will know, like, don't you ever piss me off. Don't you ever cross me. I'm a man of authority. I'm a man of position. I'm a man of power. Huh? It's a monument to himself. Well, Haman's got some faith. It's just misplaced. It's all in himself. He was the object of his faith. He was his own God. And he assumed a position that he had no right to. So what?
Steps being taken in two different directions here. And though it's not easy, the faith-filled steps that you and I are taking through God leads one place, and that's life. And right now you may be thinking to yourself, man, I'm going through hell right now. The path I am on it sucks. Let's just be real, be honest. I don't really think life could get any worse for me right now. It's the most difficult time I've ever been in, the most difficult road I've ever had to walk down. Yeah. It is tough. The road's not always easy to walk down. But I can tell you this, that on the road that you're walking on right now, you're not alone. And that's the difference. When you're listening to the wrong voice, you're on that journey by yourself. You're on that journey, you're walking down that road by yourself, and you've only got yourself to try to bolster you. When you're listening to the right people, the right person, when you're listening to God and God is directing you and directing you down that path, he's with you every step of the way. You're not alone. God's ultimate plan for you is life. Just like the steps that we take in our life, in our walk right now, I liken it to a blacksmith. So a blacksmith takes a piece of steel and he can't do anything with it. He just, at the beginning, it's just this piece of steel. But he's got a plan in mind. He's got a design in mind. Just like God has a design for your life, that blacksmith has a design and a plan for that piece of steel. What's he going to turn it into? I don't know, but he's got a plan. I don't know what it's going to look like. Maybe right now you're in that place of life where you're like, I feel like that piece of steel. Just like that blacksmith will take that and he'll put it in the kiln and he'll fire it and get nice and glowing red. The only way he can do anything with that steel is putting it into the fire. And then he starts hammering that thing. There's this one really cool show that they make knives and stuff. It's a really cool show I've seen. But they have this hammer, and they put the steel in there, and it smashes that steel, and sparks are flying. And right now you're like, yeah, that's right. I feel like sparks are flying in my life right now. I'm getting hammered, and sparks are flying, and that's tough. It's hard to be on that road. But just like that blacksmith will take that piece of steel and heat it and cool it and heat it and cool it and temper it. We're being tempered with every step we take, with every step that we take on this journey of life. With God leading us, we're being tempered. As the worship team comes up this morning, the thought I want to leave us with today is this. In order for us to take those right steps, we have to be tuned into the right voice. There's a lot of things calling at you every day. A lot of different voices being pulled in a lot of different directions, like we saw with Brad. A lot of different directions were being pulled in. Who are we listening to? Who are we having speak to us? That's the question. Because when we're listening to the wrong voice, we begin to ask why a lot. You've been there? Why? Or maybe you're not even listening to the wrong voice. You're listening to the right voice. God's got you on this path. And you're like, God, why am I here? Why do you have me down this road? When I lived in California at the church I was pastoring at, a guy came to our church. His name is Paul Sketchley. He's an awesome guy. Developed a really close relationship with him right off the bat. He was a musician, a bass player. He's an awesome guy. Loved Jesus. And we moved away from that church. And a couple years later, his wife called me. And we had been in contact, you know, every now and again. But his wife called me and said, hey, Paul wants to see you. And he's sick. He's got cancer. And he's got about 9 months left to live or so. But he's been asking for you. So he wants to know if you'd come and see him. So I made the trip from Southern Oregon out to the California North Coast in Eureka. And I remember getting there and I'd never seen anybody that way. I mean, I've had family that's passed when I was real young. But as an adult, I had never had a really close friend who I actually really loved. We were like brothers. I loved him in that way, physically. And so I walked in and he was sitting on his recliner and he had oxygen on and he could barely talk. The cancer had somehow messed up with his vocal cords. He couldn't talk well. And so that day was pretty awesome. I actually helped feed him. It was kind of cool. But we got to listen to a bunch of old jazz records because we both liked jazz and he was a jazz bassist. And we got to watch a couple of concert DVDs and we just enjoyed being together. And it was nearing my time, the end of my time to be there with him, and I was feeling some sadness, and I was getting kind of emotional, and I already am an emotional guy. I cry a lot. I've got daughters, so it's even worse now that I have daughters. I remember sitting there, and I was hearing him labor in breath and labor to speak, and I just started crying, and I just remember apologizing to him and saying, I'm sorry that I'm crying, but I don't understand why this is happening to you. And it really like upset me. It made me mad. It's my friend who loves Jesus, who's served him and served him well and loved well, and he's dying. And I had faith that God would heal him, but in that moment, I couldn't see that. And through the tears, through all that, I remember him saying one thing. He looked at me in a whisper because he couldn't speak. He said, it's not for us to know why. It's for us to have faith in God's process and in God's plan. And every time that I begin to question God or question the road that I'm on or, God, why do you have me here? Why am I down this road? Why am I on this path? Why do you have me here? That word from Paul comes to my mind and it says, it's not for you to know why. Because if God wanted me to know why, I would know why. But he wants me to have faith in him and to trust the process and to trust the steps that I'm taking. So I can leave you with one thing this morning. It's this: trust the process that God has you in and trust the steps that you are taking in him. Would you stand with us this morning? We're going to continue to worship. The team's going to lead us. We've got communion available here for those that are believers. If you don't know who Jesus is personally, it really means nothing to you. But I would certainly love to explain what that is if you don't know who Christ is on a personal level. There's going to be people here at the prayer sign. If you'd like prayer for anything, there'll be some people available to you. There's also an opportunity to give. At the Shift, we believe in giving faithfully, joyfully, and sacrificially. And we also have the confessional boards where some folks have already written on in the first gathering, what's God speaking to you? What do you need to lay out there? Who are you listening to this morning? What a great word. God, thank you for that word. Thank you for the word, God. Thank you for being reminded, Lord, that a lot of times we can listen to the wrong voices. We can become discouraged. Maybe even be like Haman, God, when we're angry. The anger rises up in us and we're bitter. God, I pray that your word would come alive in our hearts. God, that your word would ring true in our ears this morning. God, that you have a plan for us. And even though this road we're on may be difficult, God, the steps we are taking are leading us one step closer to you, one step closer to the ultimate goal for us, and that is life. Thank you, God, for turning us towards you. Draw us deeper and closer to you this morning, I pray. In your name, amen.
Chains break at the weight of your glory. I need a shelter.